Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Sunday, June 14th, 2020. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lambert. This is episode 429. I have a super special return guest. You know him. You love him. It's Rod Morrow from the Black Guy Who Tips podcast. We had a great conversation. I'm going to share that with you in a bit. I just wanted to make one announcement. On Friday, June 19th at 9 p.m., I'm going to be inside of your laptops if you pay the money. I will be inside of your laptops performing on Drunk Black History, hosted by Brandon Collins and Gordon Baker Bone. It's going to be fantastic. It's going to be fantastic. I've seen the live show. The last show that they did in February, it was fantastic. It was so much fun. You're going to see me on there. I don't know what's going to happen, but I have procured an alcoholic beverage, and I'm going to look. I don't really get trashed. I mentioned that on the Patreon episode that I had a couple tall boys, and I watched The King of Staten Island like a true Staten Islander. I don't know. A lot of people, that could be a Long Island person or a Jersey person. I remember when I first moved here and I would take the train and stuff. I guess I would see it in Chicago, but I didn't take the Metro train. The equivalent of the Metro North in the New Jersey Transit in Chicago was the Metro. The Metro was the train that would take you into the suburbs. I mean, even though the CTA transit would take you into the suburbs, but this one was like the bigger train that costs a little more and all that shit. But anyway, when I first moved here, that's when I started understanding what the tall boys were for. Like, you'd have somebody have a tall boy, which is like a big, I think it's 47 milliliters. You nerds I'm not going to look that up, but I think I was looking at it yesterday. I was like, how much alcohol was this? Cause I got buzzed really quick. Like, I had like a light lunch, but I was watching. I was getting prepared. Let's say I was getting prepared for Drunk Black History, and I was at Wegmans, and I went into the liquor store in Wegmans, and I was like, oh, they have Blue Moon Tall Boys. I'll get two of them. And they're like $3. And I was enjoying the movie. I was excited to see King of Staten Island. You can catch my reviews. I've reviewed some stuff over on Patreon. I know some people say they like my reviews, and that's great. And if you do like the reviews, sometimes they'll be on Patreon. If I don't have a guest, I try not to blab too much in the intro. Although the last 2 weeks I've blabbed more than I would have liked, but that's because there was a lot of shit going on and I had a lot to say about it. Okay. Fuck off. I'm joking. But so, I was at Wegmans and I said, oh, I'll get that. And then Friday I'll, you know, just chill out and I'll have a tall boy of some Blue Moons. And, you know, I'd see these guys on the train, and they'd have these tall boys, and that's what they call them. And they have these tall boy and they'd be drinking them on the train. Sometimes they'd have a couple. So that was like a little pop before they got off the train and went home to deal with whatever the fuck they had to deal with. So I got these. And they used to have at the Knitting Factory on Hannibal Buress' show, they used to have think they used to have tall boy red stripes, because in bars, for the most part, like because it was a show, a lot of times they wouldn't do the bottles because they, you know, you'd have to clean up the bottles. You wouldn't want them to break. So they'd have these canned beers and stuff. And a lot of times Hannibal paid you, but you also got drink tickets. Hannibal actually paid you cash, but most shows in New York City that aren't like club spots, you get paid in drink tickets. And you get, Hannibal would pay you and you get drink tickets. And I think the few times that I did drink at those shows, it would be the tall red stripes. So I had a couple of those, and then but I had a nice little buzz. So I'm gonna have a good time, and it's gonna be fun, man. Brandon and Gordon put on a good show. So the link is in my bio on Instagram and Twitter. So if you go to my link tree, you'll see the tickets and all that stuff for it. It's gonna be good. I don't know who else is on the show, but I know I'm gonna be good. I'm doing my research right now on the person that I want to talk about, and I'll try to add some personal stuff to it. And it's gonna be fun. It's gonna be a lot of fun. So if you're into that, and you know I'm gonna go in, because when Brandon asked me to do it, and I think I might have talked about this on in my conversation with Rod. I'm not 100% sure if we talked about that on the show or off mic, but The Last of Us Part 2 comes out June 19th. And Brandon asked me to do it, and I said, Brandon, you know what comes out. You know what comes out on June 19th. You know what's happening. But because I love you, and because it's black, I'm going to take some time off in getting revenge for a 19-year-old white lesbian. I'm going to take some time off from that 19-year-old white lesbian, from getting her revenge and protecting her from dogs, evil humans, infected monsters. And I'm gonna take some time off to do some comedy. Maybe I'll wear my The Last of Us t-shirt that I got. Maybe I'll crack that open and wear that on the show. So we'll see. You have to tune in to find out. So I'm super excited to be a part of that. I got some really good conversations lined up. I actually have one in the can that I may release to Patreon folk early that went really well. I was happy to have this. I'm just going to tease it. There's a person that you know of. If you're in the podcast community, you listen to me, you listen to the people that are in this podcast community. If you listen to you know, a lot of our shows, you know who the guy is. And I knew this guy. I've known this guy for a few years. But it was the first time I actually had a conversation, we've had meaningful conversations, but it was the first time that he was on the show, and it was fucking great. And I learned so much more about him. So I'm super excited to share that. So I think, I'm putting that out on Patreon this week, and then maybe next week you'll get it. And I have a couple more lined up, at least another good one that I'm excited about that, you know, it's good. It's going to be good. So I'm really looking forward to that. Yeah. So you know what? Without further ado, let's just get you to Rod. Rod was kind enough to do this because we recorded this last Saturday, not yesterday, but a week ago. And the way that things are going right now, it's not that it's like I've never told you that this podcast was evergreen, and a lot of the greats do it. Mark Maron has done it before. I'm just giving you perspective on when this was recorded. So this was recorded when the NFL video with all those players speaking out and stuff like that. And we talked about, Rod and I talked about that and what was going on. And I was talking about a lot of the hope that I feel and have in spite of all the madness that's going on. There's two young brothers that were killed over the weekend. But I think even with those tragedies, I think we still, I think the people, especially the young people, aren't going to let that shit slide. So yet again, I'm still hopeful, still cautiously optimistic about things. And I said this on the Patreon side, and I'll say it over here. Listening to Dave Chappelle, watching Dave Chappelle's 846 special, whatever that is, the nigga Nanette, as the great as the great Ray Sani said, called it. Seeing that and listening to Ta-Nehisi Coates on the Ezra Klein show, that his podcast, and hearing Ta-Nehisi Coates and Dave Chappelle talk about the hope that they have and how inspired they feel by it, that made me feel good, because it made me feel like I'm on the right track, and these two great minds thinking that shit didn't make me feel alone and thinking that the way that I've been thinking lately. So, yeah, I just thought I'd address that, but I went into more depth over on the Patreon. So subscribe to that shit. It's good. I'm not bullshitting over there. I'm not bullshitting here. Keeping it real. So without further ado, here is my conversation with the great Rod Morrow. When did you realize that we were getting closer and closer to not only Kaepernick coming back, but to the NFL, but us possibly getting reparations? When did you realize that yesterday?
Well, since this latest movement for Black Lives has reignited with the George Floyd protest and all that stuff, it feels like the Black Me Too movement. So
yeah.
Everyone's kind of getting in where they can get in, and I'm seeing a lot of people, you know, bringing up stuff that's not even related to Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, oh, Texaco didn't pay me. They didn't care about my black life. Well, I was making $7.50 an hour in 1985. Yep. I want reparations, and it's working. And so, you know, I'm with it. Like, I've, you know, so hopefully these niggas will complain us into reparations, and I'm definitely taking my check.
Oh, shit, me too. What are you going to buy? What's the first thing you're going to buy with your check?
Well, see, I already pre-ordered The Last of Us 2.
Okay, so you are doing, okay, well, I want to talk about that later, but yeah.
So it won't be that. I don't know, probably some Jordans or some rims, maybe a I already have a passport.
I was about to say, where's the passport, Rod?
I think I'm clear to buy Jordans, as according to Amanda Seals and Demetria Ovalar, or whatever her name is.
So I just feel like she's really hot, and she's not up on times, because most people just use the sneakers app.
Nobody. Yeah, she's an amazing Instagram follow.
Yeah.
You know, not so much Twitter follow.
Right. I agree. Yeah, it's like, I don't know, really care about what you, that's bad. I'm going to get canceled for that. But whatever, I don't care about what she thinks.
Yeah, I mean, my thing is, like, we liked, and this happens all the time with Black Twitter shit. Yeah. We only started liking her because specifically she was being attacked by white women.
Yeah.
You know? And so then we make people heroes and queens, and I stand for so-and-so because, you know, they stand up to some white woman or whatever, and we want to have their back. But then we don't know these people. Right. And the second they start having some actual opinions, it's like, wait, who the fuck is this bitch? You know? So, like, you got to be careful with all that shit. I don't really go up for anybody right away.
Yeah. It's fun. Like, I was gonna do a dunk on her tweet, but I deleted it. I just said, oh, we use a sneakers app. And then I just deleted it because I didn't want to shit on a woman like that. You know, I mean, everybody was fucking doing it, but I just, like, I'm good. I don't think now's not the time. How do you feel as somebody, as a voice in the community? Like, I mean, the stuff that I feel like you and Karen talk about, it's stuff that's always timely, and it's just, it's on point, and you're trying to uplift the people and at the same time make everybody laugh and have a good time. How do you feel as a person that's been doing that for years? And now, like, you, do you feel like you have can only talk about woke shit now online? Or how do you deal with that?
Well,
I'm having trouble.
Well, as a man who called, Mark Cuban to task last night with a "this you mean,"
yeah.
You know, I feel like my obligation to the community is something I take very seriously. You know, as a Black Twitter activist, you know, I meet all the requirements. I don't leave the house, so that's one of the ways I meet the requirements. I tell everybody, you know, burn it all down, you know, whenever I can from the safety of my community.
Yeah.
My thing, which is so funny, is that I always attack shit through jokes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to always, you know, kind of see the humor in something. And then that determines if I can, if I will comment on something.
So, yeah.
You know, if I find something funny, then it's easier for me to process it. And once I process the funny in something, then I feel more, at home, you know, talking about it. So
yeah,
that's the main thing for me.
Yeah, I feel like things have crystallized for me where it's like if I ever get to get on a stage again, whenever that happens, I found a way into something that I've been wanting to talk about for a while. And I was actually talking to my dad about just everything going on last night. Last night I talked to him, mm-hmm. and my parents and everything, and I made him I made him laugh, and it was really dark, and my dad's almost 80. So I was like, oh, that could be something, but I would never say it on Twitter. I would never say it. But I just feel like, you know, like I just feel there, like
there's
go
a
ahead.
Lot of stuff like that. There's a lot of stuff I don't say on Twitter that, you know, I think is either hilarious, poignant, and it's not even that I think it's like bad to say or something. It's just Twitter is not real life. It's
yeah.
the same shit I my podcast that people understand. They give you a benefit of the doubt. They know your heart, and that, you know, that's a safe place. You know, it's like I imagine almost like the stage for comedians to a certain extent, where like I can work this thing out, I can work through this thing,
right?
And you know whatnot. You know, I have complicated feelings all the time about some of the shit I see on Twitter. I just know that you can't say it on Twitter, but you know, without having to worry about these niggas getting in their feelings. But you know, and even at the end of the day, Chris, if they get in their feelings, so fucking what?
That's
you know what I
too.
Mean? Like, yeah. I'm just the kind of person that doesn't want to hurt people's feelings. You know what I mean? Like, I never leave my house. Like, I'm gonna make these niggas mad, but at the same time, like, sometimes people's feelings get hurt, and it's just a collateral damage. It's not like you set out to do it, and some people's feelings are determined to be hurt.
Yeah, because I've been seeing people make these poignant statements. I'll retweet a few of them. I like them. Like I donate money to the bail funds and stuff. But it's like I'm not going out there, I said last week, I was like, I'm being selfish right now. I want my friends to stay home. I mean, I get it that you're kind people and you're woke and you want to. You niggas stay at home. You know, I don't know. I just feel like I've been talking about this stuff with people like you and my friends for years. I try to champion stuff that I think is important or what about Black people and Black stuff. But I feel like if I got this you'd, I would probably, somebody would pull up my tweets about Pretty Little Liars. And there's so many of them. We got to uplift our Black women. This you talking about Arya from Pretty Little Liars. Go ahead.
What's funny though is like, I feel like we're not on the radar enough to get to this you.
That's true.
But we are on the radar enough that if a white person gave us the right attention, we could get to this you. You
yeah,
know what I'm saying?
That's true.
So like if you get SNL or something, then that's gonna happen. Like right now, I'm in the perfect black comfort zone, right? Only black people really know me and fuck with me. You know, cool white people like me, but not everybody and all that shit. Let us get a serious satellite show. Now, then I got the dish you coming.
That's true. Yeah. I just try to find, like, because I'm, like, I've been really happy with a lot of music that's come out. There's been, like, I'm obviously excited about The Last of Us. I've been doing my little countdown with, like, the numbers of, that, like, the players with the, like, 13 days until The Last of Us. Today is, like, 12 days. I put a picture of Randall Cunningham up. Just as something to just, like, look forward to, like, the silver lining in it all. But then I just, maybe I feel like a little bit like an asshole because I'm posting it. But then at the same time, it's like, fuck it. I want to enjoy what life I can out of this, you know. And it's, yeah, it just makes me feel bad, like the people, like that we're in a pandemic, and then I don't want those people to get sick. And it's just fucking crazy. But
yeah, I had a couple of days I had to take off this week because I was like just mentally fucking drained, and I was getting annoyed with people. I was starting to feel like I was going to be short with people.
Yeah.
You know? And that's not something I want to do. I think right now, as hokey as it sounds, we need patience for each other. We need kindness for each other because we're essentially, you know, all in a state of mental shock and panic and anxiety at all times. And I don't want to add to that. So yeah. I just logged off and, went to watch some planes take off from the Charlotte Douglas Airport and went to Goodwill and dropped off some clothes and shit and just, you know, just got away from it all for a second.
Oh, that's good. That's really good. Yeah, I'm trying to think. I've just been trying to cook more and stuff. I made some lemon pepper wet wings. And just realize, like, damn, I'm good at this. Like, I've spent so much money at Hooters that I could have saved for like some sneakers or a passport or something.
Now, are you in Hooters for the food or the boobs? Because I feel like, you know, that's a big distinction there.
I like the wings. Like, a lot of times I'll just get takeout. You know, I'll get takeout and I'll sit at the bar. Sometimes I might get a beer or something as I wait, but usually it's just for the wings. I mean, the girls, the women, they're hot. Don't get me wrong, mm-hmm. but I just don't want to look like a creep, like the just the old guy, just like, hey, you're beautiful. Oh my God, you're in school. What are you studying? You know, yeah.
But what's the worst guy? What's the worst guy in Hooters? That guy or the guy that brings his whole family? You know what I mean? Like Which one's worse to you?
I think it's that guy, because the guy that brings his whole family, they're just trying to. He probably likes those wings. He's like, I can maybe get a little side peek at somebody, but he's really focusing on his family. He's feeding his family. His wife's there. You know, he's getting her what she wants. And most cases, the wife could say probably, nah, we're not going there. So
In my mind, I always feel like the guy with the family is worse than the creepy dude, but both are bad.
How so?
Like creepy loner dude is real. Like, that's bad, especially if they know you. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't get any worse. Like, if you come in, they're like, Chris, that's not good at all. Like, bad life decisions.
Yeah.
But then also dude that brings, like, either a date or, like, their family to Hooters, is also a weird dude to me for some reason. Like, I don't know, especially if they have like a young like son or something. It always feels like he's going, now these are boobies. Okay, this is what we're into, Matthew. Okay, take a look. You know, she's ordering. I'm gonna order some fries. You get a look at them titties. You know, it just feels weird to me. I don't know. Hooters is such a weird place. I don't like going there.
I like the wings. I mean, if there was a place that was better, like consistently good, I would go. Like, I ordered Wingstop a week or two ago, and it wasn't bad. It was actually pretty good. But then I realized I could just make my own, and it's a lot cheaper, and it's not even that hard. I just bought a Dutch oven last month and been like experimenting with that.
My brother makes wings in a Dutch oven. You know what's the worst about the other thing about the Hooters, to me, this is the problem. This is the problem I have.
Okay.
Because of how men are, women know, you know, we're pretty stupid. Yeah. And they treat it like the strip club type thing where they touch your shoulder when you order. They make like extra weird eye contact because they know that that's how they're going to get a tip, is because men, they aren't really tipping based on the service. They're tipping based on like, can you make me believe you actually like me as I eat 27, you know, fried wings with ranch sauce and drink a tall boy, overpriced tall boy and wings. Can you make me feel like I need to give you a $15 tip as opposed to the, you know, $3 tip for the really shitty service that you actually did do, but you touched my shoulder, you know, you put your hand on my knee, and that's what made me be like, oh, I got to give you an extra 20%. That whole vibe, I hate it. Oh, you know what I mean? I need to feel, this is just me, my personal hangups. This isn't it. Like, if you love Hooters, guys, I'm sorry if Hooters sponsors this episode, I'm really sorry, but it's my personal hangups. I need to know people genuinely like me, or just at least how they genuinely feel. So I don't like fake like. It's a big turnoff.
I feel you, man. I mean, most of the time I'm in there, it's just takeout. Like, I'll call it in and then just eat it at home, and I could just like watch TV or YouTube or some shit. But I mean, they are hot. I mean, those women are lovely, but I just feel it's just because I'm 40.
That's the other thing too, Chris.
What's that?
A lot of times the women in the Hooters that I go to, well, I haven't been in years literally, but that I used to go to with my boy, who was a Hooters person. He was one of them people that went there like a couple times a week. not that hot, you know, I say, you know, not that I'm one to judge, but
yeah,
you know, Hooters has a certain type of woman down here that they like.
Okay.
And normally they ain't got no ass. And even with them little high shorts and shit, there's no cheekage beneath the shorts, which is, you know, that's a sign of a nice butt. You know what I'm saying? And they don't hire those type of women. Even when they hire black girls, it's the same white girl body type, quote unquote, my white girl. The archetype that we've all seen in Playboy since 1955 or whatever, not that no black woman has a body like that. So yeah, they clearly have ass discrimination up in there. And I, for one, am the Kaepernick of ass discrimination. I will not tolerate it. I will boycott. I will take a knee for that ass. So
I think we all would. Yeah.
Yeah. There's absolutely no way I'm going back up in there until they hire some sisters. And it's sad because it's on the black side of town, and they still went and hired these fucking Harley Davidson ass white women. I was mad as hell.
Damn, that's it. Yeah, there were two in my area. One of them closed, and then the one that's like right around the corner from me. I think they're most of the really attractive ones. This is really a bad episode. The really attractive ones are working the bar. Some of the that I've found to be the most attractive, but like, I don't know, man. I don't think
we've overstepped any lines.
No, we haven't.
We're actually, at least from what I'm gathering from you and I definitely what I'm putting down, I don't like the atmosphere of like, I don't want to cross the professional customer line. I don't want to holler at the Hooters waitress. I don't want their phone numbers. I really don't like them touching me. So like this, I don't like it. I think it'd be more, and they're already wearing clothes. The purpose of Hooters is literally to ogle these women and pay for overpriced food, which men have been doing for decades. So I mean, I feel like if anything, maybe we're using Hooters wrong. Maybe you're going in there getting you know, you're in there going in there getting takeout, and I'm like, I don't even want to go. Like, I feel like if we were crossing the line, we'd be the other people. Like, yeah, I come in there to see some titties. You know, I know Jocelyn's in there. I request her for my table. You know, I touch her on the back of the, you know, like, I don't do any of that shit. Like, get me the fuck out of here. Go to IHOP.
Yeah, that's true. I just always have to do that as a disclaimer to make sure. But then nobody cares, I don't think. But
I think you get in more trouble for saying you would try to holler at a Hooters waitress.
I did get in trouble one time. a couple years ago, and I actually called you about it, about a time where I said something like I had an emergency and I had to go to Supercuts, and I got the woman that cut my hair's number. Nothing ever happened, but I love
how you had to say you had an emergency, because you knew that's unacceptable for any black person.
I know, but at the
haircut emergency. Okay, I just want you guys to know my haircut was flatlining, and that shit needed 12 cc's of Supercuts.
Exactly, but it was the place, and this is how it came up. It was a place where I had discovered my favorite shampoo. It's like this Paul Mitchell tea tree oil. And this woman that had found me from, she was lovely. She was nice. She wrote back and everything. And she was, I think she found me from Slate when I was on like Aisha Harris's podcast when she was over at Slate. And she wrote me, said, you know, like that you could hit on her while you were on her job, if she was on her job. And I was like, I'm not, like, it's just kind of like reading the room where, oh, that might have been acceptable, but nothing ever happened between me and her. So it's like.
Did you call the woman that wrote in a Karen? Because we can do that now.
No, I don't know. I think she might have been biracial. I'm not sure. But that me and that woman, actually, I talked about it on the podcast, and we had an exchange. It was very like classy, but then somebody else wrote like, I can't believe, do better. I was like, okay.
Jesus.
Somebody messaged me.
Hey, you should have tried to holler at her.
Yeah, maybe I should have.
You're right, sis. I don't know what I'm trying to mess with this woman for when I got beautiful women like you writing into me every day. How you doing?
Exactly.
Okay, you got a man?
Exactly. That's what I should have did.
What if that was the thing? Like, every time someone would write in and be like, this is inappropriate, you would just do another inappropriate thing.
I know. I just can't take this guy. What an asshole. I'm surprised that women even listen to this show. I don't know. Some do, I guess. I'm surprised anybody even listens.
You do a pretty thoughtful show. I think you have good emotional intelligence. I think I can see women listening to the show, man. Have you heard some of these other shows, man? Like,
not really.
You're not one of these like females, bitches, and all that type of stuff. So, like, I can see women listening, man. Like, it's just different types of women out there that want to hear different things. Yeah. Hey, bro, there's people that listen to these hoteps and shit that are women. Then there's got to be some women willing to listen to Chris Lambert, you know?
That is true. That is true. I got a big thanks for bigging me up a little bit, man. I also wanted to ask you. So the NFL, you know, Goodell, you know, making that state, that gave me hope. I mean, as somebody who's like, it just makes me, that made me cautiously optimistic about stuff. I'm not going to say that it's so bleak. And I think with people putting it with their feet actually on the ground doing stuff, you know, there's been protests in Bergen County where I live, and people like some of my comedian friends were out there and stuff. That gives me hope. And it did get I think those protests did get all four of those guys charged. And the Chauvin or whatever his name is, they upped his
Officer J.L. Chauvin. Yes.
Yeah. So they upped his charge. And so that gives me hope. And then the NFL doing this, it's like, it was great. And to me, like, you know, and I still see people say, well, fuck you. It's like, they fucked up. We know they fucked up. And they're kind of admitting this. And that's the work of the people behind the scenes. I know.
Allow me to pontificate upon that for a second.
That's why I want you on the show. Go ahead.
I find it egregious that people are coming at these young black NFL players for standing up, quote unquote, too late for Kaepernick. Mm-hmm. People like Saquon Barkley weren't even in the fucking league when that happened, but they're young.
Yeah.
It's kind of the Michael Jordan, Harvey Gantt thing, right? Like, you yourself probably was not taking any political stand of any worth because you didn't have much to lose anyway. But at 25.
No, I wasn't.
You know what I mean? And so to expect someone, just because you look up to them and they're very good at a sport, to have some type of prescient knowledge and understanding of politics and the ramifications of everything is ridiculous.
Yeah.
No, like that's ridiculous. So I think that was a problem from the jump. It's just what we expect. These are the same black dudes that are in the category of people whose lives are getting snuffed out by the police. So it's not like they feel no connection, but they're at work.
Right.
You know, and they're at work in a very regressive, conservative place.
Mm-hmm.
The NFL is not some liberal, you know, this is an institution. This is one of the most conservative, big money institutions in America. And so what those dudes did whenever they did it was brave. That's why what Colin Kaepernick did was brave. It's because he did it ahead of the curve. But, you know, if everybody was on the same page and did everything with them, it wouldn't be as bold what he did. You know what I mean? And they made an example of him because he did it, essentially did it first. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, and this is, I don't want to knock Kaepernick, but if he would have actually organized a movement and said, hey, black NFL players, we are kneeling on blank day, he probably still would be in the league because everybody's kneeling, right? Mm-hmm. But he chose to do something individually and then didn't even ask other people to do it. Wasn't even like, get down with me or none of this shit. So this is an organic changing thing. And I applaud those brothers for coming out and making that video, whether it be 2 years after the fact or whatever. You know, like they could have continued because no one was expecting them to do shit. They could continue right. to be like, yeah, it's whatever. I'm getting my check. I'm good. I don't want to lose my job. This is an industry where the average career is 3 years. So I'm just trying to, you know, keep my head down, make it to the point where I get an NFL pension and live my life, you know. And so those dudes chose not to do that. And all of them need to be applauded. And more importantly, the people behind the scenes, black people who work for the NFL, who organize that shit, they need to be applauded because they stayed there and they work within that system to make that shit happen. So when you see the NFL have to bow down and Roger Goodell to have to repeat what those black men said mm-hmm. and talk about Black Lives Matter from the NFL, that's them making that movement. That's also Jay-Z making that movement.
Yeah.
You know, because different, that's Malcolm Jenkins. That's all these people pushing at the same goal. I'm sorry Kaepernick doesn't have a job. He should, and I agree with anyone that says it. To me, the only misstep Jay-Z ever made in this whole thing was probably saying that it wasn't about Cap having a job. You know, that's mm-hmm. probably the only misstep in any of this, but the truth of the matter is, it isn't really about him having a job. You know, like it has to be bigger than that, and he was kneeling for something bigger than him having a job. You know, so two things can be true at once. I want him to have a job. I want those players to want him to have a job and all that. And at the same time, the matters of Black Lives Matter and social justice are different and bigger than just that one man.
Yeah. My only thing about that video was like Odell Beckham was like trying to be a little too sexy. Like he was just a little too R&B. Black Lives mm-hmm. Matter, girl. Like he almost could have said girl at the end.
Yeah, hey girl.
Yeah.
It's Odell.
Yeah, it's Odell. Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. I was so happy because I wanted to hit you up and say, yo, you see my boy Patrick Mahomes in there?
you see my quarterback, young? Mm-hmm.
Little disappointed that Dak wasn't in there, young.
Yeah, yeah.
Ezekiel got the email. Dak didn't.
Dak definitely a this you candidate. So
yeah,
he got to be careful on these Twitter streets. Because I know they this you'd his ass when he said that shit about his black family being criminals. His white family being law-abiding cops or some shit. I don't know. I don't think Dak's... That's the other thing, dude. I don't think all these niggas are ready to have this conversation because not all of us weren't. You know what I mean?
Right.
At that age, Are you fucking kidding me? I wasn't ready to talk about all this shit at 25. And then what's even crazier is they want them to be able to talk about it at this age as if they're always on Twitter and reading these books and they learning all this shit. Nigga, they are rich. Okay.
Yeah.
In the words of Lil Wayne, I am a young black rich nigga. Okay. They live in life, man. They might come to this shit later in life.
Yeah.
When things slow down and it's not just, you know, endorsement, clubbing, partying, life shit, you know, women, money, all this. Like when shit slows down, they might come to that awareness, but you know, asking these niggas to be like super woke from day one is so not productive.
Yeah. I'd like to think if I was an NFL player or a basketball player, I would be one of those guys speaking out. I would definitely be on those videos. I know I would be on those videos, but like, I think a lot of this stuff comes with time and people.
What do you mean you would be on those videos? What do you mean? Like at that age?
I would if I was one of those. If I was in as good as Patrick Mahomes was at football, I would be talking that shit too. I would be saying Black Lives Matter. I would be participating in whatever the league needs. I don't want to say it. I would have been one of those dudes in the video. I would have
okay,
said.
I feel you. Let's examine this though.
Okay.
Right?
Let's do it.
So with these young NFL players now, what happens, they might grow up in the hood. They might even come from the hood. But for the ones that excel like that, people latch onto them early. These mm-hmm. coaches, these college programs, these NFL teams, these agents, all this shit. Once they see that you have potential outside of, you know, being good at your high school team, whiteness comes in and starts to, form around you. Mm-hmm. And they try to feed you that you're special. You're different. You know, you're going to make all this money. You can date my daughter. I'm happy. You know, hey, I saw that with in the Ben Simmons documentary that he did.
Yeah. The Showtime joint.
And the thing that tripped me out was the fans who were grown ass white men coming up to him like, hey, have you met my daughter? And I'm like, bruh, they literally are like, because you play for my favorite team, here is my daughter. I would love for you to date and fuck her. Like, here's an incentive to stay here and play basketball. That's insane, right?
Yeah.
So these niggas don't even have the upbringings that we think they have. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So like a young Chris, you know, you're active in your community, in your theater. You got your parents kind of like guiding you in certain directions.
Yeah.
Maybe you're reading and learning about Black history and all this stuff. Patrick Mahomes didn't even understand what the fuck it meant for Doug Williams to win a Super Bowl. That was a year ago.
He's rich.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, not just rich, but like he's been indoctrinated into a certain echelon of whiteness that is balanced precipitously, obviously, but balanced on the idea that you don't know yourself, that we don't let you rock the boat that way, that, you know, we're always guiding you, kind of like Taylor Swift's daddy, towards, hey, I'm not telling you to come out here and say you're conservative, but I definitely don't want people to know how liberal you are. You know, that's the people around them. That's their agents. That's their managers. That's their, owners, their teammates, the media. You see what I'm saying? So like, this is so brave for those dudes to come out and make this stance. And I would hope that you would be this kind of person, but I just wanted to highlight all of the things that will basically push and commodify these dudes into silence and into being like, well, I mean, I'm a black man and I feel like this is racism, but I also know that, you know, this is risking my job to bring it up.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. I think, and Patrick Mahomes, like, because we talked about it maybe a few months ago when that episode of The Shop came out, and y'all, I think you were joking with me about him being on there and something he says. Oh shit, I gotta watch this. And I think with Patrick Mahomes, like, his dad was an athlete, like, so he's in grew up like a rich kid. People that respect the cops, the cops probably respected him and all that. I just think based on the way that I was raised, and if I was good at football, I would probably be one of those guys. If like just taking all the like the schooling and stuff, I don't know, that would be just the way that I came up. I would think that I would be one of those guys that would be on the video.
Yeah, I'm not trying to take it away from you. Yeah. I just wanted to point out how much different their life is, even from how we assume, like, because it's kind of like alternate universe theory where you like assume so much would be the same that in another world where you're also the star quarterback, Chris Lamberth, you're still mostly the Chris Lamberth I know now. And I'm like, dog, whiteness is so fucking pervasive, and it literally comes in and gets the kid at 15.
That's,
you know,
true.
What I mean? So
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Even have a chance to form a lot of this shit, the connections with your community and family and all this, like a lot of this stuff is you're not really able to form and get a solid base for who you are. So by the time they're asking Dak Prescott at fucking 20 years old about Black Lives Matter and shit, he don't have the base to say the stuff he did just even this year. You know what I mean? Like the difference between him 4 or 5 years ago and this year, as he donated $1 million, is a stark difference, in my opinion.
That is true, because it's like, it's almost like if you don't grow up hot, you have to develop a personality,
right?
And then that's always going to have to be. So these guys' personality, in air quotes, were their talent, and so people don't really care about they don't care about who you are. What you offer. That is true. That is something to think about. Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
If keeping it to Virgil's right now, okay?
Now see, can you give me the background on that?
I'll come back to this.
Okay.
But if we keeping it to Virgil's right now.
Okay.
Colin Kaepernick didn't have an awakening until he was almost 30.
Mm. Me and Morgan Campbell talked about that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the dude who started this had his like Negro wake up call. He started dating that Nessa chick and was like, you know, I'm growing out the fro. I'm taking a knee. I'm woke now. That nigga was like, what, 27, 28? So like, we're looking at like dudes younger than him. Like, well, why the fuck you ain't stand up for Colin? Like, what the fuck are you talking about? Colin wouldn't have stood up for Colin at 25. Like the impact of what he's doing, this is the purpose of what he did to impact the world and the spread. And it is not. And to be honest, I'm not sure that was what he wanted, but it's what he's getting. I remember saying fucking when this shit happened, dog, I said, getting him out of the league doesn't mean shit because what he did is bigger than that. They lost when he took a knee. They lost then. This has been a 2-3 year process now of the NFL slowly accepting that they fucking lost, man. You can't erase this dude. You can't hide this dude. And you can't hide what he means to black people. And so it didn't matter. All the histrionics and half-truths they've been telling us, bullshit. Like, nah, this is the real. Virgil is a dude, apparently he was like a designer.
He makes those off-white Nikes that are hard to find. Yeah.
Right. And so people, he wanted to start. First of all, he said some shit about looting and rioting and burning stores and shit. I don't know if he went as far as black on black crime, but he just fucked up and said that shit. And then after that, it was like, okay, well then, y'all, I'm trying to start, you know, a positive trend, a giving trend. And he put a picture up, a screenshot of him donating $50. to a cause, and it was supposed to motivate other people to match it, and everyone gets $50 and it'll grow. But people was like, nigga, you rich, or you got money, you selling shoes for all this money and you only giving $50. And so Virgil's name became synonymous with 50 on Twitter. And so when I say, you know, keeping it to Virgil's, that's just keeping it 100.
Oh, okay, gotcha. All right. Yeah, I did see that, but the people were just going in. I didn't know. I do. He does have these Nike off-whites that are fucking incredible. I was talking to a comedian, Will Miles, last week. Those are my grails. And I saw Josh Gondelman wearing them. I was like, fuck you, Josh. That's the only time I've been jealous of somebody for their sneakers. But yeah, because I tried to get them at retail and I couldn't get them. And anyway, one day. Yeah, dude, like I think that's something good for me to think about. I mean, I think it would be like like a sliding doors situation where there would be some of me that would be intact, but it would make me different in a lot of ways, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and like I said, this is how, as an empath, this is how I operate, and normally I'm able to keep from being too harsh a judge on anybody because I have to recognize that some of their experiences are different than mine.
Right.
And I also have to look at myself, man, and the people around me. You know, a lot of us have worked with and for racist people.
Yeah.
I mean, and we weren't in there taking knees like I don't know why everyone's turned into like a Twitter revolutionary, dog. Like, a lot of us have had to bite the bullet for that motherfucking check. And it's not like we was in there shucking and jiving, but we just were like, God, I hate coming to work at this racist place. I can't wait to get another job. No, none of us was like, I'm going to unionize the workers and we're going to, you know, we're going to all take off Monday and on Juneteenth and prove these motherfuckers. Like, none of this was happening. So,
right.
How look telling like the Clippers, y'all should not play a fucking nationally televised NBA game. So I feel better sitting at home watching the game that I'm telling you not to play. Like, that's bullshit.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, I'm never really too hard on people like that, especially entertainers. Like, I saw somebody trying to talk shit about Jay Ellis because he's got a white wife. Like, they just discovered it yesterday. And they were trying, I was like, he's a guy that works on a good TV show.
Wait, who got a white wife?
They said Jay Ellis has a white wife.
Jay Ellis from Insecure.
Yeah.
That's like, sad if he got a hotter, you know what I mean?
I mean, I don't care. Like, and it's like with some of these, like some of them, I just like, I like this guy. It goes back to what we talked about a while ago. It was like, I had a mom and dad that I look up to, you know, and I like Michael Jordan because he's good at basketball. I'm not asking him to give me anything else.
I try my best to stay out of the who the fuck is dating who shit unless they say something anti-black. Like, if you don't say nothing anti-black, then I hope you're dating a down-ass white person or whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean? I really, like, I make jokes about it with my friends or some
of
shit.
Of course.
Yeah, I'm not going to fucking assassinate someone's character. But that's Twitter shit where they just... Yeah. They have to jump into the whole, like, ain't shit. You hate black people. You hate yourself. No matter what you've been saying, this is all a lie. You just sitting at home letting her call you nigger every day and eating outside in a doghouse because I saw one picture of you at a fucking red carpet with your white fiance type shit. Nah, I think that's so stupid. It's like the worst parts of the in the room black conversations that we have at home,
right.
But now they're out here for the world to see, and that's one of the worst type of conversations because it's so reductive and bad and then the other reason I don't like it is because it definitely forms along those team lines.
Mm-hmm.
So like black women will have a problem with like Jay Ellis, but not a problem with like Venus Williams dating a white dude,
mm-hmm.
which to me is like bullshit. And then black men will do the opposite. They'll be like, yeah, he got him a thick, you know, he got him a white girl or some shit. And then at the same, you know, like, why Finn ain't get the fuck right? But then at the same time, if they see like Serena Williams or Kamala Harris dating a white man, they're like, no matter how woke that white man is, it's like, that's fucked up. You know, she should be with Drake or Common or something like.
Well, she tried to make it work with them. It didn't work.
Yeah, well, even if she would have never tried, right?
Like, I know, but it's not like she didn't try. I mean, it's just, you know? It's in the books. I mean, she tried. So she dated whoever she wanted to date. I just thought about that because it was just like you made me think about that, where it's just like this bad place of the internet where it's like you're judging all these people, and it's just like I don't care who he dates. I care about
it wouldn't be bad. I just want to say it wouldn't be bad if not that I would agree with it, but it wouldn't be as bad if people were even with it. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
That's
like,
true.
If they were like, I just hate any black person dating a white person, I'd be like, that's fucked up, but at least you're fair. But they're not even that consistent. They really be like, I just hate black women who date white people. I just hate black men who date black. I'm like, well, what the fuck is this shit?
Yeah. It's just that whole, like, I always think of that when I see a woman. I have an inside joke with a buddy of mine where it's just like, I think of that Chris Rock joke where when he did on Big Ass Jokes, where he's like, what do I got to do to get with you? Like the Debbie Thomas and all that shit. Like she dated a white guy. I just think about that. It makes me laugh. And then I just move the fuck on. But it's just because I like her. She could be any race. I mean, it doesn't matter. But I would just like leave it alone. I would never be like going. They said he's hiding her. He's hiding his wife. All the pictures of him on Instagram. He's with Issa.
Yeah, it's funny because like, how can he hide her? She's at every red carpet. Like,
yeah, I don't know.
And if he's quote unquote hiding her, what does that tell you about you?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, right. You're actively looking for to see if he's with a white woman so you can like chastise him and denigrate him. We've seen what happened with Michael B. Jordan and all this shit. Like,
yeah.
I get it. If you got a white woman at this point, you got to hide her. Okay. They're getting called. They are the new niggers. Okay. We call them Karens instead of the N word, but that's the new niggers right now. We are on a hunt to find them and accuse them of racism no matter what the fuck they're doing. That's the worst thing about social media, man. We have lost the white friend. Remember that?
Yeah.
That used to be the thing, the down ass white person. And it used to be okay to say you knew one. And now you have to pretend that, you know, that, because it's not like they went anywhere.
No.
Because they down. Right. So in real life, you actually do still see them and hang out with them and all this shit. But now on Twitter, a lot of them hiding their white friends. Like he hiding his white fiance and you hiding your white friends. Okay. We know that you got white friends. Like none of y'all niggas live in Wakanda.
Yeah.
Y'all got some white friends that you pretend not to have when you log into your account. And it's a shame.
Yeah, that's true. I was talking to my parents this week, just, you know, my mom asked, oh, have you heard from anybody? I was like, oh, just, you know, talk to my friends that I normally text or whatever. And, you know, but everybody's got their own life. And I just kind of came to the realization, like, I have friends that I care about and who care about me. But if you're married or you don't have if you're married and you have a significant other, you kind of focus your life on them and then your immediate family. And then like, that's kind of it. Like you kind of have to be with yourself and you got to be comfortable with that. I don't know. I don't know why I even brought that up. I was just thinking about like relationships and friendships. You think about if you see people say, if you're white and you check up on your black friend and fuck you. I don't know. I've had some of my white friends ask me if I was okay. I've had some of my black friends ask if I was okay.
I don't really have white friends anymore, but I did have an ex-white coworker who hit me up to ask if I was okay.
Yeah.
And he seemed like a pretty cool dude and everything, but he wrote this long ass shit. I didn't even read it all. I was like, all right. like, what is this? This is to make you feel good. Yeah, I think if it was my actual friend, I might have read it because I do want my friends to feel good. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
But you're not even really like that tight with me. It's like, it was like overly like, anything you need. Me and my family, we will do. I'm like, I don't need shit from you. Like, what are you doing, bro? I'm good. Like, go get some money to a charity or some shit. Like, bail out the block. Go to one of these fucking rallies and, stand in front of some protesters in between the police. Like, I don't need shit, bro.
Yeah. I guess that's just, I guess maybe quote unquote shrapnel from people waking up and making sure that they're, Did I black me to anybody? Have I done that in the past?
Ugh. I feel like Kenya Barris in the last episode of Black as Fuck, where he was just like, fuck, man, these white people, I feel sorry for them. Like, You can't even go outside. The sun hates your skin. You got to wear sunscreen. Like, you know, and I, obviously it was a juxtaposition to like the first episodes and stuff, but the whole point of like fucking like white people are so fucked up. You know what I mean? And that's kind of how I feel right now is like, online, it's got to be almost, as a white person logging in and seeing like all the black people finally being like, hey, hey, if you're white and you're not saying anything, you're complicit. Okay. your knee is on my neck.
Yeah.
You know, and seeing that over and over and over from every black person, I'm sure them white people don't know what to do, because then if they say something, it better be perfect.
Yeah.
Right. So you can't. So if you don't say nothing, you're fucked up. Okay. We taking notice. Okay. You better say something. Okay, cool. If you say something is not perfect, we gonna fuck you up too. If you say something perfect, but you have ever fucked up before this, we bringing it up. So like, these motherfuckers are catching hair on it. It's so funny.
That's why it's kind of like, man, can I have a little bit of fun out of this shit, or can I sit back and laugh? Because sometimes I get to the point where, like, I almost double dutched into somebody's situation that. Well, she was handling herself, and I almost made a comment that would have included me in the thread, but I was like, I'm good. I'm just going to stay out of that. You handled that perfectly, but it still made me want to double dutch in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll just retreat into something else, some music, or go down a YouTube rabbit hole, because I don't want to get into that stuff. And I don't like it. But on a lighter note, Rod, go ahead.
Bro, like last night about 11 p.m. someone knocked on my door. I looked at the ring alarm, I seen who it is, so I opened it up. It was Drew Brees. He was coming to apologize to me personally. He's going house to house, just letting us know that how sorry he is that he fucked up.
He's like a anti-racist Santa Claus. He know he's fucked up, he's gonna apologize, coming to your house whether you wanted him to or not. I don't know. I haven't had time to write that, but yeah, he know he fucked up, because it has something to do with his image being fucked up, because he's done great things, like, you know, in that community in Louisiana and everything, but he's still tone deaf, and he may still believe that shit, but he just knows that he's getting wrecked. And it was Shannon Sharp told his ass he might need to retire.
Yeah, Shannon went in, bro.
He did, yo.
That shit was hard.
Mm-hmm.
I have no respect for that man, Skip. I was like, oh, shit. Like, he said Skip about 55 times, bro. Like,
yeah.
Skip. I was like, oh. Like, he started going there, boys. That's when he the maddest, because he said Skip every time his brain is loading up another bullet to shoot this nigga with. He's like, and Skip still the best of all time of any white man in the history of the United States at saying mm-hmm, in the face of black rage. I've never seen anyone so his worth and is earning every fucking dollar. Like, he never says some white shit. He never says some racist shit. Like, when a black angry rant is happening, he just sit there, right, lean back. Mm-hmm.
He doesn't Max Kellerman it like Tony and Bob was saying.
Max be trying to double dutch with you. He be trying to get in it too. Like, yeah, you know, Jay-Z ain't shit. You know what I mean? Like, he, like, nah, it's like my man Skip really will sit there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's what he said. That's correct.
Because
mm-hmm.
when Tone and Bob were talking about it on Fire, so I was like, yeah, he does do that. Yeah, I guess Kellerman does. Like, I was like, shut up, shut up, Max. You're not gonna be blacker than me,
bruh.
But I like him, like, though. But yeah,
like, niggas eat that up. Because when Stephen A. Smith was having his personal gripes with Kaepernick, probably
still does.
Man, black people were so happy to have Max on that damn show saying how we felt. I was like, yeah, this is a trap. I'm not falling for this one. Y'all gonna cancel Max for some old raps or some shit.
Yeah.
One day. And I'm gonna have to be like, see, I should have never liked them.
This you? Oh my God.
Yeah. It is Durag rapping in the 1998. Is this you, Max?
I was like, oh, fuck. Because everybody thinks that it's going to happen to them. It could happen to them too.
Yeah.
Go to my old Tumblr where I liked a picture of Kirsten Dunst, you know, just. Oh, shit.
This nigga said Scarlett Johansson, the GOAT. Cancel.
Cancel this nigga.
He stands a transphobic queen.
Oh, my God. Yeah, dude. Like, I just I don't know. It's a fascinating time. And I mean, this past week, it's given me hope in a lot of ways, too. You know, I can't not see that. What people are doing to you know, improve, and it just makes me want to fight in my way that I know how to as a creative to come back heavily armed when I'm able to, you know, because I just feel like I kind of turned a corner in my stand up where I want to continue that, not to just. You know, like I've always been somebody that's been a little subversive in the way that I deal with stuff as a comic. I mean, so it's just trying to have more fun and trying to open stuff up, trying to like tap into my anger a little bit more than I usually do and let people see that side of it. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think also like, so that's what I'm saying, right? Like, when you were like, I would be on that video as and talking about blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, as a comedian, think about your journey.
Mm-hmm.
How long did it take before you felt comfortable being like, I'm going to express some more darker things on stage? You know, I want to talk about some things that half the audience might laugh and half the audience might be like, I don't like this shit. I feel uncomfortable right now. You know, I think these dudes doing this at such a young age, I applaud it because,
oh yeah,
for whatever industry, whatever art you're tackling, when you black, you know, and you're living in that dichotomy, man, it takes a while of living world experience, knowledge of reading and history and stuff before you really get comfortable welding that type of power, you know what I'm saying? And so yeah. I really respect these dudes. Because, I mean, shit, as many people was on that video, it's a lot more NFL players quiet as fuck right now, you know? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, they just keeping it to, you know, maybe a subtweet or some shit, but they not ready to put their face out there and do all that. So, you know, I appreciate all these dudes, man, no matter how they fighting. That's why I never turned on Malcolm Jenkins. I never was calling him out his name. You know, I never let Eric Reed bait me into thinking it's an either or thing. Like, nah, man, it's all these people are trying to do their thing in a different way. And, you know, there's going to be some disagreements. Malcolm and Martin was fighting until they weren't, you know.
And so you've read stuff on your show about activists not getting along like back in the day.
Yeah, man. Shit. Adam Clayton Powell, man, if you can read his autobiography, man, like he used to clown Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. Like he used to fuck with both of them, and then when he needed them, he would use them. I'm going down south, I need some of these Negroes to help me out. Let me help them out. But you know, like this shit is just way more complicated than people like to talk about.
Right.
And because I don't really see everything in black and white like that, I know it could be a bit frustrating to talk to me about the shit for some people, but I'm like, bro, I'm never gonna not lean into the fact that that blackness is complicated and not monolithic, and there's not necessarily a bad blackness out there. You know what I'm saying? Like there's things that happen to us that make us take some short-sighted and bad actions at times, but we are inherently not bad. And if you start from there with the assumption of some level of empathy and love for your fellow black people, I think a lot of times you'll end up at least understanding the reasons for somebody's actions, you know, assuming they aren't just, you know, completely, you know, there's obviously there's a line where mm-hmm. there are people who are completely vile and just vapid and mean and all that shit. But even with those people, there's something that happened to them where they made a decision to be Jason Whitlock or Candace Owens.
Oh yeah, definitely. And that's who you made me think about. I just feel like talking to you about this now and then just experiencing, just witnessing what I've seen, you know, from my laptop, from my television, just like there's a lot of hope too. Like it and it's like, you know how, like, I don't know, I'm trying to remember if it was when Ta-Nehisi Coates was on Colbert and he's like, "Do you have hope?" And he's like, "I don't know." And, you know, like he didn't just give Colbert what he thought he wanted to hear. He's just like, "I don't know. I don't think so. Will everything? It's just like that incremental progress that I feel like we are moving the ball forward. I think that I just hate that it had to be from another black guy getting killed by cops, you know. But
I appreciate saying that, because that was I think he might have been the first person that I remember really being able to say that in full, you know what I'm saying? Like, just with his chest.
And yes.
Be like, "Nah, I'm not going to give you what you want."
Right.
And tell you that, you know, there's a solution and everything's getting better. I'm just not, because, you know, I've studied this problem. Mm-hmm. And all the solutions, it keeps fucking adapting to the solutions and adopting the solutions. And none of the shit is necessarily just the key that unlocks everything. So,
right.
Yeah, I was so happy he said that, man, because I felt that way for a long time. And then after he said it, I said, okay, so, you know, this is not, you know, it's like when the first time you meet a black person who's an atheist, you're like, "Oh, okay, so this is not, it's okay to say this." Mm-hmm. You know?
And you realize you're not alone.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal, because when you think, especially when it comes to race relations and society changing to benefit us and everybody else. And I think, like, I think Kenya Barris said this I've talked about it a bunch of times on the show, like when Star Wars, The Force Awakens came out, you had a character like Finn, and we didn't know what he was going to be in the show, in the movie. But he said, Kenya Barris said, once things open up for black people where we finally start getting our respect, like just to be treated as people, it'll open up for everybody else in this race and in the country. If we're speaking from a national standpoint, just like with diversity and things opening up, I liked what he said about that. I don't remember the exact quote or anything, but I do attribute it to him. I think that was, you know, truthful. Where the fuck did I want to go with that? But yeah, I think, I don't know, man. I'm feeling, I have oh, mixed, and, go ahead.
And that's the other thing, dog. If you're honest about where you were, then you can be honest about where you are and where you're going. You mm-hmm. see what I'm saying?
So yeah.
I felt hopeless at times. I still do at times. Mm-hmm. It just depends on what day it is.
That's true. But yep.
That NFL video did make me feel like that is definitive progress. I don't give a fuck how you try to, like, couch it in pessimism and be like, "Well, it ain't really." Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. I'm not saying it solves anything. But I'll take it a step further. I don't think if Kaepernick gets a job, it solves anything. It doesn't change shit.
Right.
But I will give that to people where I'm like, "You know what? You're absolutely right. This might not be much for you, and it's okay if you feel that way. But for me, I was very impressed by the fact that those black players wielded their power together in unity, mm-hmm. and it made the league have to address it, because that's really been missing. A lot of this has been behind closed doors. A lot of this has been meetings with the NFL owners and trying to get them to come to the table. This is the first time that the players are like, "Fuck a table.
Mm-hmm.
This is how we feel, and this is what we want for my job." And they fucking did it. And I wouldn't be shocked if that's the other thing too, man. And it's his fault, because he came into the league this way. But Goodell trying to pitch himself as, you know, Commissioner Goodell, the you know, the guy who is the principal of the league.
Right.
Well, he became the face of the league. And I honestly, in my heart of hearts, believe 100% Roger Goodell wants Kaepernick to have a job. He wants the NFL to be pro Black Lives Matter and then on these social justice movements. But he can't, he literally can't do it. Like, because of the way the league works, he can't mandate they give Kaepernick a job. He can't tell the owners they have to hire him. He can't even get them to hire Black coaches, which he wants. You know what I mean? Like, he's doing as much as he can to not be the commissioner who leaves. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I actually believe him, I think, unfortunately, because he made himself the face of all this shit, he can't escape the ridicule and the ire of so many casual fans and that just go, he's the face of the NFL. Fuck you, bitch. Get hire Kaepernick, as if he he could hire Kaepernick to work, you know, in the NFL office, but he can't hire him to be a football player.
Right. And he gets paid to take those slings and arrows too. He gets paid handsomely, so he can deal with it.
And selfishly, I think this is about his legacy to him.
Very much so.
He don't want to leave as the commissioner. I think he has one more year. He don't want to leave as the commissioner who had all this shit happen on his watch. But it's going to happen, bro.
Yeah, dude. I want to see somebody Photoshop a koofy on him. I just want to see that. I would love to see that. If I knew how to do it, I would do it. I fucking love seeing that shit. And I looked at it again before we started. It just made me feel good, you know, like, yeah, like these cats are really standing up. And it's a beautiful thing, because I remember, like, when a lot of this went down, like JL said it a few years ago. He said, if these dudes said that we're not playing, it would be a problem. And I felt like we were getting to that. When I saw that video, I was like, these motherfuckers might not play. What if they decided that they weren't going to play? It, you know, we'd be in for some shit, because we're already in a pandemic. If they said, I'm not playing, I don't like how y'all treat us, and it's a pandemic. So,
the real shit that I like, and this is not going to happen.
No, it's not.
And I know it's not fair to put this on them. So let me just start there. But in my fantasy world, my NFL fanfic, like 2 years ago, they just all went to the fucking half, you know, the 50-yard line at the start of the game, took a knee during the national anthem, and then they walked back to the locker rooms. You know what I mean? Like, at least the Black players, you know, that's my dream 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Now, I know that's not fair to put on those guys, and I know that would probably never happen, because that wouldn't happen at IHOP. That wouldn't happen at McDonald's, right?
Right.
But that would be my dream, is them being like, we're not playing until this dude is back in the league and until you are committed to preserving the Black lives that literally fuel your entertainment.
Right.
You know? But I get it. On an individual level, that's very scary. It's easy for me to say and all that shit. And the NFL would take a huge hit viewership and revenue-wise if that happened. But I don't know. That would be the most radical thing I've ever seen in all of, like, sports, and maybe even, you know, one of the most radical things I've seen in America. But, I understand why they didn't do it
too. Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. My eyes got big seeing that shit. I was like, oh, shit. And it just made me feel good, man. Because, I think now more than ever, like, I've just kind of, like, appreciated, you know, like, what those, I think I've always, I always kind of had my pulse. Like, I always tell Randolph, I was like, Randolph, I don't think he'd have a problem with me talking about that. But we'll talk. He's, man, Stephen A. said this. I was like, dude, you ain't even supposed to be watching sports. You don't even like sports no more. I said, we already know that the emperor has no clothes, especially when it comes to the NCAA, especially when it comes to all this stuff that we've talked about for years. So, You, if it's gonna make you mad, don't watch it. If you gotta write for it, then that's another thing. But watch some other shit, like, because this is how it is, and you see these changes happen that makes me feel good. Like these changes that happen within these structural, within these institutions, that's going to give me hope. Like the, like you just, you said 20, 30 minutes ago about the NFL being this huge institution, to see that internal change, that's the hope that MLK wants. That's what he fought for. That's what he died for. That's what all of our forefathers died for, to, for us collectively to take that baton and push it forward so the next generation doesn't have to worry about it. Like our parents did stuff, survived stuff to make it easier on us to sit in our houses and our apartments and talk about this shit, you know? So I see some light at the end of the tunnel, but what I mainly wanted you on here for, I didn't know we were going to talk so wonderfully about this stuff for this long.
But you know what, I always love talking with you, Chris. Yeah. I appreciate you thinking of me, and I always enjoy coming on here. And I know, you know, hopefully I think the audience will enjoy these meandering, like, long, thoughtful conversations and shit, because, you know, we always get good feedback when you come on our show and stuff like that. So hopefully people appreciate this content.
Yeah, I just like having you. As a man, I feel awkward from just calling you on the phone. So I'll just say, I just use it under the guise of, we're doing a podcast. You have to talk to me. That's what I do with every guest I've had on the show, basically.
A toxic masculinity won't let us just hit each other up like, you all right, bro? Is everything
good? Yeah. So let's just let thousands of other people listen to our conversation.
Right.
So what I really wanted, like, I didn't fucking mean to be this woke. I wanted to talk to you about PlayStation.
Absolutely. PS4. I got one.
So look, man, I've become a little envious and jealous of you because you've plowed through damn near the whole entire catalog of a lot of these top games. Talk about your journey overall, and then we'll get a little more specific with some of these games. Like you finished all five of the Uncharted's, right?
Yeah, I beat all the Uncharted's. I beat Last of Us, and I beat the regular missions of Spider-Man, and now I'm playing through the DLC.
What level are you on the DLC of the?
I beat the heist, and now I'm on Hammerhead's missions, and that nigga, boy, his shit is hard.
Is that the third one?
Second one.
Like, okay.
These niggas got new weapons and shit. They got Gatling gun dudes. They got these fucking dudes that got like some type of like electronic shield and jetpack combination.
I hate
like,
those. Yeah.
These are hard, bro. I keep fighting all these niggas and getting killed, so it's tough.
Yeah. So talk about The Last of Us first. No, we'll talk about that last. We'll save the headliner for last. Talk about Uncharted. How did you feel about that series?
I loved it, man. It got significantly better as it got closer to the end, which I guess the old ones were probably on PS3 or something, and then must have gotten that up converted shit, so they were cool, but the best ones to me were Thief's End is really good. It's very cinematic. I found there will be like 10-minute cutscenes and shit. And there was like a whole thing where you play like Crash Bandicoot in the game, you know?
Yeah.
So like that was definitely different, you know. I enjoyed that, and the ending was just like spectacular. But for me, I think the one before that, which might have been Uncharted
3.
Maybe 3?
Yeah.
Or something. The one before that was probably the best one of the Nathan Drake series. And then the Uncharted Lost Legacy to me is the best game they made. The one with the two women.
Oh, yeah. That it's like, go ahead. Yeah.
I was gonna say the mechanics were just fucking amazing. The level design was amazing. And then the way they gave you the open world field and the Jeep and all that shit, was really dope. Just a great series of games.
Yeah, I think they have because I played Uncharted 4 maybe 2 years ago, and that, like, The Last of Us Part 2 was already announced, and I was looking at that and I was just like, God, if this game looks the way it does on a PlayStation 4, then I mean, what the fuck is how good is The Last of Us Part 2 going to be? And I just really just enjoyed it. And you made me get back on the horse and finish Lost Legacy. So I finished that last month, like maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I was like, man, this game is pretty incredible. Like, this is it looks great. Like, that last sequence, maybe the last half hour of the game, was just incredible. Like, a lot of fun. And even though there were two freaking broads in the game, I never really had a problem with that shit. My only problem with that game was, like, damn, you really fucking kill a lot of brown people. You're a killing.
One of my favorite elements of Impossible White Man as a genre.
Yeah.
I actually was watching, I'm not done yet, but I was watching Extraction on Netflix yesterday.
Yeah.
Amazing Impossible White Man movie. You know, mm-hmm. We'll see how it ends and see if it completely fulfills the prophecy, you know, if he makes it all the way through. But man, just going to a brown place, getting involved in their local politics, killing indiscriminately brown people, whether they're police officers, military or not, yeah. Like, that's my jam, you mm-hmm. know. So it was as Nathan Drake, you know. And then they got woke near the end. That's the only thing I didn't like, is they got a little too woke during the end of Nathan Drake, and they moved into, like, okay, we're going to have him killing white people who are after the same artifacts as him.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I mean, I feel y'all. Like, I guess I'm supposed to feel better about that. But, you know, I prefer my problematic, like, hey, I just came here to steal these brown people's things and kill them for them. So
when I talk about Nathan Drake in a bit of mine, like, on the EP, and when I was working that joke out, like, I would say, like, yeah, Nathan Drake, he's kind of like an Indiana Jones swashbuckling type. He's like, you know, steals stuff and he kills all these brown people. It's kind of problematic, but it's a fun game. Like, I did a rant on it and just trying to describe him, but I just kind of took it out. But it was, yeah, like, they definitely kill a lot of brown people. It's like fucking ridiculous. You kind of at a moment where you're like, God damn, there. And then, like, Naughty Dog was like, we stand for Black Lives Matter. We're just like, but y'all motherfuckers.
Not in the game.
Not in no video games, though. But
even in the last game, Lost Legacy, you play as the Indian woman and not the black woman.
But she light skinned, though, and she a light skinned Indian. And they,
yeah, well, colorism is real. Mm-hmm, okay.
Yep. Right, yep.
It's real in here. But yeah, you don't even play as, like, the black woman. Nope. Like, you think you would play as a black woman, who, that's who I wanted to play as. And I was actually disappointed a little bit, because in A Thief's End, she was whooping our ass.
Yeah, boy, she was hard to beat.
You cannot beat her. She would just whoop your ass, and then you have to find a way to, like, wait for a truck to drive through the wall and run away. And then when I got to this game, man, she wasn't that helpful. You know what I mean? We was fighting the fair one with these motherfuckers, and it was too close. I wanted her to come in there and dominate.
The NPCs are never that helpful. They say with The Last of Us, it's going to be better. Like, I looked at their like behind the scenes YouTube clips, and they said they're supposed to be more helpful. What is this girl's name? It's Nadine. The thing, a funny thing about Nadine, the black character, she's voiced by a white woman, Laura Bailey, who's going to be in Last of Us Part 2. And that was kind of, I was like, damn, y'all, you couldn't have got, like, y'all couldn't have got Gugu and Botha Raw to do that? Because she kind of looked.
We got to hit them with the This You. Like, take a picture of the casting from IMDb, put the screenshot up there and be like, This You?
This You, whatever. Naughty Dog? You know, yeah. I love y'all, but This You?
Right. This You? You can make it up reparations by giving me the early release of the game 15 days early.
Mm-hmm. Shout out to my man Tajay Moment, who's a YouTuber and has a great Last of Us YouTube page and everything. He even said, like, he was like, yo, can y'all make a black character that doesn't die? You know, like, it, I mean, when he was on the show, that's one of the first things we talked about is like Henry and Sam in The Last of Us. Like, you get it that they're not like main characters, but it's just like, Jesus Christ, like, can we get some? And I'm seeing some black characters in part two in a lot of these trailers and whatnot. I'm like, they're not going to be long for this world. You know, mm-hmm. But yeah, I thought Lost Legacy was a fun series. Now, let me get your comparison on Nathan Drake versus Lara Croft. Since you've played them all, where do you stand? Like, who's better?
Oh, obviously Lara Croft is better. That's not even close.
And that's what I agree. And when Tajay was on the show, he said Nathan Drake, and I was like, well, I'm 20 years older than him, so I can see why. But see, now you get it. So I have somebody on that understands.
Yeah, well, if we're looking at the current iteration of Lara Croft, it's not fucking close, because when Lara Croft is like surrounded by enemies and hiding, covered in mud, hiding in a wall of kelp.
Yeah.
I don't feel scared the game is going to like catch me and I'm gonna die. I feel like they should be scared. You know what I'm saying? It's that it's like Rorschach from Watchmen, the movie, uh-huh. where he goes to prison. He's like, oh, I'm not trapped in here with you. The criminals are trapped in here with me. Like, I'm fucking y'all up. Like, I don't know. Like, y'all had this way wrong. So that's how I feel as Lara Croft. Where I'm like, look, with Nathan Drake, I still feel like I'm really trying to survive.
That is true. In a way,
it's almost survival horror in a way, because, like, you know, the ground is cracking from underneath me. The bad guys are coming in from the ceiling. They got helicopters that do, and it's just scrounging here, run here, shoot this, run there. And, you know, you it's like I barely made it out of this encounter. With Lara, there's like a lot of encounters in the game where I'm like, ooh, cool. I finally made it to a room full of people to kill. Thank you.
I think you verbalized a lot of my thoughts and emotions on that, because I don't think anybody's fucking with her. Like, I think she's the best. You might have to throw another character like Aloy from Horizon Zero Dawn. I don't know if you've ever played that yet.
Not yet.
Okay, but you have it though, right?
Yeah, I got that.
Okay.
I got a bunch of
Death
Stranding.
Okay, so like, but I don't think anybody's really fucking with Lara Croft because of what you just said. And then Uncharted is a little campier than Tomb Raider 2 also. But who I think, after June 19th, I think, you know, she's got some competition with this 19-year-old Ellie. Because,
yeah, well, Ellie's a beast, and I feel like that game is so much different than Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
Like, it's close to the same aesthetic, man. It's like, that shit is just different. And then with the monsters in there, it's like a whole different vibe. So, with Ellie, I don't even feel like, I put it this way. I don't feel like if I dropped Ellie into Tomb Raider 1, she is going to become like Lara Croft, because it took her like, you know, Joel under her wing and like mentorship and all this stuff to kind of do that.
Yeah.
And she was a little bit younger than Lara was
right
at the time. But I feel like when Last of Us 2 comes out, that Ellie could definitely survive the Allen. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right, right.
So the first one was kind of like, you know, especially until you play the DLC, you know, like she's cool. She's a great character, all this stuff. But like Joel was doing most of that work.
Oh,
he was
yeah.
doing a lot of heavy lifting. And Lara never had that. Not even with what's his name? That's like her.
The bodyguard guy.
Her pro dog. Even that dude, like. He was kind of, you know, hey, he was kind of a bitch, you know.
He was like, oh, can you help get through that, Lara? You all right?
Yeah.
You all right in there?
That nigga wasn't too much help, and then he was always getting captured and shit. Oh, Lord, they got me. I need some help. I'm like, nigga, the fuck? I told you go back to the ship. You know what I'm saying? Like, stop trying to help.
I want you to talk about Spider-Man, and then we'll close with The Last of Us, and then I'll let you go. You've tweeted that the Spider-Man PS4 experience was the best, was one of the greatest Spider-Man stories ever told.
I believe it is the greatest Spider-Man story of all time.
And why do you believe that?
I can't believe it's in a video game.
Okay.
You know, like I can't, I've read all the comics.
Mm-hmm.
I watched every movie, every TV show about Spider-Man. Like I love Spider-Man, but God damn, this story was good, bro. Like one part of the reason. So wait, what can I spoil and what can I? Because I don't want to like piss anybody off.
Well,
I don't know the rules.
The game is like 2 years old and it's for free on PlayStation Plus. If you know, so I mean, I don't think you can spoil it. You can spoil. Okay. It's been 2 years. Right. It's so still a fun play anyway. Great play.
The number one thing that they did that was so fucking smart. They did not just throw you in the middle of all the bad guys that are the A-plus number one hitters, right?
Right.
That's most of these game companies, they blow their wad by being like game, Batman's going to fight the Joker, Two-Face, Clayface, all this, you know. And so like by the end, it's like, well, I fought all the best people. So why do I want to play game number two? You see what I'm saying? Like,
right.
I fought Mr. Freeze. So game number two, I'm fighting Mr. Freeze again. You know what I mean? Not that I love those games too, by the way. But the point being, like, they took a different tactic. They were like, let's go with some bad guys that don't get that much credit. Let's go with Mr. Negative. You know, let's not even make Norman Osborn into the Green Goblin yet. Let's not, like, they give you the Sinister Six.
Yeah.
But like they sneak the Sinister Six up on you. So like they mention that you have fought all these bad guys in the past, but you never see them. You know, it's like, yeah, you fought the Rhino, you fought Scorpion. And I'm playing the game. I'm like 3/4 of the way through. I'm like, yo, they're more concentrating on the story than just trying to throw all the bad guys. And that's when they hit you with the haymaker. That's the Wrath breakout.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the Sinister Six.
Yeah.
You know, like it was so good as I was fighting through the prison and fighting through the raft, because they had the raft on the map. I was like, why is the raft even on the map if I'm not going there? And so when you're fighting through that level and you're realizing like, wait, someone let, you know, the Scorpion, Matt Gargan out and he's got new armor. What the fuck is this shit right now? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then here's the Vulture and the Vulture's got some new, like, what the fuck is this shit? And then I was, by the end, when they ganged up on me, I was counting. I was like, okay, so Electro, like, you know, I'm doing Rhino, all this shit. I'm like, that's five. Holy fuck. It's the Sinister Six. Where's number six? And you see Doc Ock climb up the building,
mm-hmm,
to talk that shit. And I'm just like, bruh, this is the greatest fucking feeling, because that gave you the feeling of the comic when you get to, when the Sinister Six gang up on Peter and you're just like, what is happening? Like what, these niggas start working together and you're just like, oh shit. And it made me feel overwhelmed, like, how am I gonna take it down? And then when you go back into the city and the city has like crime on every corner, Silver Sable and her men are trying to kill you as you web just through the city to get to different missions and shit. That it was so amazing. And this is a game that stars that you taking down Kingpin. Like,
yeah.
And then the cut, like, they made it a real story that has like comic book repercussions. Like in the comic book, if Peter takes down Kingpin, then like, say, the Red Rose or some other gangster will pop up. And then that becomes a new arc. Like, yo, Peter kind of made things worse. And, you know, J. Jonah Jameson, you know, hating on you the whole way is so smart because, you know, it's J. Jonah Jameson reminds me of Twitter, where it's,
yeah,
just like, no matter what the person does, they will spin it into, this is evil, this is bad, this is what's wrong with the world. And that's what J. Jonah Jameson does with Spider-Man, right?
Right.
And so anyway, I just loved all of that stuff. They got every element just perfect. And so up until that point, it was already one of the best stories they've ever told. But to me, it wasn't the best story.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, yo, this shit is like top five Spider-Man experience, dead or alive. But
wow,
the ending where you have to pick between Aunt May saving her or saving the rest of the city, and you already know, because you know Peter deep down, you know his moral code, you already know what he's going to do. Mm-hmm. And when he tries to stick the medicine in the IV for her, and you also know what May would want. She wouldn't want him to save her and let everyone else die. So, like, when he gets so close to just giving her the medicine and being like, fuck it, and he can't do it, and then she dies, and I cried for real. I was like, yo, this is like, because they just nailed the character so well.
Yeah.
And they nailed the decision and the tragedy of Spider-Man's life. And they took it in a way that they didn't take it in the comics and stuff. You know, like, I know May's died and come back in the comics before, but like, they took it in a way where it's like, this is the core of Peter Parker. And it's why I love that character so much, because Peter Parker is about, what do we do with tragedy? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, at the core of most heroes, that's kind of the lesson is, what do we do with tragedy? And with everyone else, they have different reactions. Like Batman, he's like about vengeance and control, right? And with Peter, to me, the thing that he does with tragedy is to persevere. Mm-hmm. Like, and that is what that character is about. Like, he, like, you the trying is the goal. The attempt is the thing. And then sometimes it works out. A lot of times for Peter, it doesn't, you know, at great personal cost, you know, losing relationships, losing family members, losing his own, you know, shit, like losing everything to try to live up to this unattainable thing, because he has great power, right? With great power comes great responsibility, and he feels the weight and the guilt of the world on him because he let his uncle die because of his own hubris, and he is now punishing himself through fighting crime for the rest of his life, because he could, you know, as brilliant as he is and with all the gifts that he has, he could just be, you know, Tony Stark.
Yeah.
But he'll never do that, because he's incapable of not caring. He's incapable of going past a mugging on his way to save his girlfriend. You know what I mean? Like, he has to stop both. He has to attempt to stop one, or else he's not okay stopping the other. And I played the game that way, by the way. Like, the way I think it was meant to be played. I didn't go, okay, well, there's a crime happening on 37th Street, but the mission says get to Doc Ock's lair. Like, nope, I'm stopping crime on 37th Street. That's what the fuck Peter would do.
Yeah.
And you hope that it works out. So, yeah, man, this is the most amazing story they've ever told. And, you know, and that's before you incorporate the little stuff like Miles Morales.
Oh, God, yeah.
Black Cat, I love the complicated relationship with him and Mary Jane, where they're it's a relationship as adults instead of kids.
Mm-hmm.
And they start off not even together, you know. So I love that stuff. Tragic Doc Ock is such a great choice of character, because Doc Ock is an amazing character in the comics, you know, especially if you ever read the Superior Spider-Man run. But he's such a great character because Doc Ock and this, I would say this about most superhero fiction, which is why I love it. Great villains are reflections of the hero, right?
Mm.
So a great villain is Peter making different decisions. So Doc Ock comes from an abusive home where he saw a bunch of abuse as a kid, but he also grew up as a nerd, was ridiculed, had, you know, superior intelligence to most people, and ended up with the urge to try to, like, prove himself to I think his father was either killed or he killed his father or something, but to prove himself and to protect his mother, which is kind of like Peter and Aunt May. And he ends up erring on the side of hubris and erring on the side of his own arrogance to be the best brain and prove to, you know, in a weird way, Doc Ock wants to save the world too, but he wants the world to know he saved it. He doesn't want to do it behind a mask. He doesn't want to do it in secret. He wants the credit, you know, but he also has a bunch of inventions that can change and better the world and better life, but it has to be catered to his ego. So seeing a tragic Doc Ock and them writing in like that he had like MS or something like that, muscular deterioration or something, and then this was his way of coping with that through the arms and all that stuff and using his brilliance. And then of course that same process being the one that would drive him to madness and into anger and not being able to control his emotions and stuff. It was just such brilliant writing, and they left so much on the table for another game. Like I didn't get Green Goblin. We didn't get Venom. We didn't, you know, there's like all these characters they didn't use that can really change the game.
Yeah, it's it was a fantastic game. I mean, I have to finish the last DLC, and I was playing that a couple, because you actually inspired me to just get back into game. I've just been so hell-bent waiting on this game that I was like, mm-hmm. I kind of don't want to play anything until I get my hands on T-Lew 2. And then that was a great review of the game. I want you to talk about, we'll close with you talking about your Last of Us Part 2 experience, your Last of Us experience, and then what your thoughts on what you've seen on Part 2. So just talk briefly about your Last of Us experience.
I had thought that you might have been overselling it. you were saying all these years, like, greatest game ever and da 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 da. And I was like, yeah, maybe. You know what I mean? Like, I hope it's as good as he says. But, you know, I'm one of those people that try not to get my hopes up too much because, you know, then I don't want to hold it against you if I play it and I'm like, nigga, this shit wasn't that good. But you were right, man. It's so good. It really was one of the greatest video game experiences of my life, man. Like, yeah. I see why the fuck people are. What was the game come out? 10 years ago or something?
2013. June of 2013. Yeah.
So I see why people have been waiting 7 years with bated breath for this fucking sequel, bro. Because I'm so glad I got to play it close to the sequel. I'm glad I didn't have a PlayStation 4 when it came out.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a long ass wait, bro. So to be able to beat it and then get to play the sequel like 2-3 months after is perfect. But yeah, man, the mood and atmosphere of the game is second to none. The mechanics, while clunky, serve the purpose of being like, you're not invincible. Mm-hmm. Like you're very human. You need to think about the strategies before you enter a room. But at the same time, it's not truly punishing. So, you know, while the odds are very overwhelming, you can still get your impossible white man on.
Yeah.
And as long as you just don't go like, you know, Nathan Drake or Lara Croft on it, you know, you can be like, all right, I'm going to isolate this dude, throw some cans over here, and I'm going to choke the shit out of his ass. You know, I'd love to see what mechanics they add to the future, because what was that game with Silent? Something
Splinter Cell?
Siphon, is it Splinter Cell? Yeah, that's
okay.
No, you said it. Splinter Cell. I would love to see them add some Splinter Cell stuff to it, where maybe I can move a body after I choke a nigga out.
Mm.
You know, something like that. Cause there's other elements that I think would make the game like fun and a little bit more thoughtful or whatever. And I mean, it's been 7 years, so it'd be cool if they do that. But yeah, man, I loved it. And then when you get to play as Ellie, I mean,
moment like for you?
I mean, it was so dope, man, because they make you feel as overwhelmed as possible at that moment. Because, you know, Joel, I thought Joel was going to die.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was the whole hook. I mean, 99% of games and stories where you have like a non-related protective guardian of a little girl like that, like the whole thing game is the savior thing, right? Give up my life so you can live. And so I was like, well, I guess this nigga dead, that's the end of the game. And she was like, no, I'm gonna save him. I was like, wait, there's more game? And when you're playing as her, like, that shit was intense, because, you know, you can't make the same mistakes, and you can't fight the fair one as her. Like, you gotta fucking sneak up on a nigga and knife him shank him in his neck. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, that that was dope, man. She was such a great character to play, and like I really enjoyed that, and the DLC with the backstory of her and that little black girl that she was, I guess they were, well, her first kiss. I don't know exactly the whole full relationship or whatever, but you know, that's something you just never see in games.
Yeah,
like you don't see kids that young get to be gay. Like it's always like, you know what I mean? Like a weird, like, you know, because they kiss and it's not like a sexual, like, you know, it's no weird pedophile shit.
No,
but they like they kiss and it's like such an innocent thing that like I've taken for granted as a straight person my whole life of like, yeah, that first kiss in fucking Stranger Things or something, you know, they can make the whole fucking series about is this boy gonna get his first kiss from L? What a amazing, you know, and yeah. Like a lot of material, like kids know they're not straight at that age and they don't get shit. So yeah. I thought that was cool to put that in the game.
Yeah, that was a big deal back. I mean, you know, we talk about how toxic people can be online. I mean, that was like a big deal. There's a kiss and blah, 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 blah. And now people are trying to put stuff on the game that's not really there. And like when the leaks came out like 2 months ago, it's only a fraction of what the game is. Like you actually have to play this game to really experience what it is. And none of us who haven't played it don't know. Like it's just, we don't know until we play it. So people are just making these hasty generalizations, but I don't give a fuck if she's, it's almost like Ellie is like Rey in a lot of ways where, yeah, you might like girls. You might be in a same sex relationship, but the goal is whatever the goal is for her. She just likes women. Nobody really gives a fuck. I don't give a shit. Like I'm not trying to be like, well, it's okay if you like da 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 da. It's just like whatever Ellie's revenge is, whatever reason it is for her to go on this tirade, that's the reason for playing this game. Because it's Ellie and because you care about this character that you've grown to love for, you know, the experience of playing that game, and you want her to be okay. So, I mean, that's kind of how I look at these games. And I just think that with part two, a lot of the complaints was they didn't need to do it. Oh, Sony is trying to make money. Naughty Dog they're not putting these games out to not make money, and they want to make this money. So my interest is, okay, Naughty Dog, you've had a history of telling me good stories, stuff that I would be engrossed in, stuff that I thought was fun. Like I thought Last of Us was a one of the best gaming experiences I've ever had in my life. Nathan Drake, fun character, adventures, beautiful set pieces to play in. You've given me a track record, so you're making a part two of this. I want to see what you do.
Also, I mean, let's keep it a buck. They gonna make the money anyway.
Yep, they are.
So, what? Like, what the fuck are people even? Oh, y'all just doing this to make money, nigga? We got your money.
Yeah,
like you know what I mean. It's like if Red Dead 2 was like, we're making a black protagonist. They might make a little less money than they would have made with a white dude, but there's not. It's Red Dead 2. You're buying it. What the fuck?
Right. Right. It's just people. It's a lot of bullshit because this is so at the time when Spider-Man came out 2 years ago, it was the highest selling PlayStation 4 game ever. And now The Last of Us is already surpassed that. So there's a lot of people that are saying, and they're selling these collector's editions for like $300 and $500 on eBay. So you can't tell me that people don't want this game. And it's a lot of the people that are complaining about, because I've been entrenched in all this for at least 2 years. Remember when I did your live show, I was showing the sound guy the YouTube. I just gave him my phone and showed him the trailer.
Yeah.
I've been entrenched for like a few years now. and just been seeing all the scuttlebutt and everything, it's like, no, the people that are complaining on YouTube and are talking about it, they're going to play the game. And they might be playing it and then telling you to not buy it after it comes out. They might be like, you know, performing on their YouTube channels. But it's going to be a hell of a game, man. I'm excited.
I'm so glad I found, like, shout out to my wife, Karen.
Shout out to Karen. Shout out to black women.
Shout out to black women holding black men down. I'm strong black female. You know, they so strong. You know, I cheated on her 12 times. She stayed. And that's why today on my Instagram, I'm going to highlight her. You know, she might not be a dime piece like the Instagram models I follow, but she my Beyonce. You know what I'm saying? So, nah. Those are the worst posts.
Oh, my God.
You ever see those niggas? Like, they always be thinking they complimenting they women.
Yeah,
and it's always like it's low key a passive aggressive just dragging of their woman.
It's like, dude, you're the worst. Why is she with you?
Look, she might have fucked up 4C hair and be too dark. You know, I normally like a light skinned woman. She might be fat, but I'm tell you, I love her. She held me down when I was in prison. She take care of all my kids with the other women.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm like, bruh, this is not the compliment you think this is. I have never given her a reason to stay. Not once.
Yeah.
But she is 30 years later. But no, shout out to my wife, man. She secretly bought me a PlayStation 4 through our Amazon wish list. And and fooled the shit out of me. I was like, what is this? And it sat there for a while because I'm so used to playing Xbox. And I do love my Xbox One. I don't get the rivalry thing where you can't like both systems. That's crazy to me. But
yeah.
But man, these PlayStation exclusive titles are dope as fuck, man. Like, they really dominated these games, man, and I'm so glad I'm getting to play them. I, you know, I've enjoyed some of the games that are cross platform, you know, Batman Arkham Asylum series, Tomb Raider series and all that stuff. But these exclusives, the Spider-Man, Last of Us, Uncharted for me was, like I said, it's good, but it didn't feel like I would buy a PlayStation for this.
No.
Yeah, but Spider-Man and Last of Us definitely have that, like, oh, you got to play these. Like,
yeah,
you can't call yourself a gamer if you haven't experienced these games. They're that fucking good. So,
I
fucking love that system. I'm just glad we're able to have, a Switch and a PS4 and an Xbox One.
Yeah, dude, like, that's I think you'll enjoy Horizon Zero Dawn. Now, you've already pre-ordered The Last of Us Part 2.
Absolutely. Can't wait. When is Spider-Man coming out? When is the sequel to that?
Probably for when the PS5 comes out. Like, I'm sure, I don't know, it might be next year or soon after. Like, I think, because we were supposed to. And kudos to Sony. I mean, they were supposed to have a PlayStation game event, PlayStation 5 event last Thursday, and they stopped it. You know, they said, but in light of everything that's going on, you know, Black Lives Matter, we're going to postpone, you know, the presentation. But, you know, we'll soon find out. I'm going to get a PlayStation 5, but... I don't think I've ever gotten a system like release day. Like, I don't know. They say it's going to be a hard get, but we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah, I heard that they're not producing as much, as many consoles this time around.
Yeah. Cause I actually bought a PS4 Pro for my birthday. And cause they said, like, you have a newer system, but they said, if you have an old PS4, like, that shit might take off. Like, it's going, that fan is going to be blowing like shit. And because it's pushing everything to the max, because it's like one of the last games on a generation. And people were talking about, oh, they got to do a Last of Us Part 2 remaster. But it's just compatible with that system. Like, it might look a little better and they might add some patches, but it ain't too much, you know, cleaning up you need to do for this one, so they say. So Yeah, but do you do digital or are you going to do like hard copy?
Digital. I prefer digital. I'm not nostalgic or you know, I'm not the kind of person that needs to have like a physical copy. This Spider-Man game came with a physical copy, mm-hmm. which is cool, but because it came with the system, but if I had my way, I'd just download it.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, I've already pre-ordered it digitally, and then like I think somewhere in the like a year or two, somewhere last year, I ordered one. I just put like $10 down on a special edition. I've covered all my bases. I've got the Ellie edition coming. I've got a collector's edition from Best Buy. I got Ellie edition from GameStop, collector's edition from Best Buy, and digitally. So I'm probably going to give one of them away. I'm giving the digital copy, the physical copy to somebody. But yeah, I'm a psycho. But I
would have pre-ordered it, and I'm going to, I'm going to take Juneteenth off to play it. I think actually, I kind of can't take Juneteenth off. I think I'm doing something with Brandon Collins and.
I'm doing that too. Juneteenth, Drunk Black History.
Yeah, Gordon Baker Bone and Brandon Collins. So
yeah,
I guess I'll be working kind of, but
yeah,
I can't. You know, I'm going to be playing that game up until time.
Yeah,
you know?
when he asked, well, we'll have something to talk about. Well, when he asked me to do it, and I looked at the text, I was like, I said because, and I called him. I said because it's you, because it's this show. I'm in, mm-hmm. but you know what comes out that day, right?
Right.
Yeah. So
for the rest of the Negroes, it's their Juneteenth.
Yeah.
But for me, it's Last of Us 2 Day.
Yeah. And I'm buying that movie that, what's my girl? Oh, God. See, I'm going to say her name. Juneteenth movie. What is her name? Oh, my God. I'm going to, and Kendrick Sampson? Is that his name?
Yeah, Kendrick Sampson.
He's in it too. He's playing like a shitty dad in the movie. Nicole Beharie. It's a movie called Juneteenth that's coming out. A former beauty queen and single mom prepares her rebellious teenage daughter for the Miss Juneteenth pageant. I don't know if it's
not a preview.
So. Yeah, yeah. So I'm a find some time to watch that this week, that weekend. But my main focus is to take this LGBTQ character, a white woman, to get her revenge. Drunk Black History is going to be fun. The tickets, as we're recording, the tickets just went up last Friday. I think and so that's going to be there. That's going to be a good time, man. That's going to be fun.
Mm-hmm. I don't even know who I'm supposed to be talking about yet. So
I got my person. We'll talk. Well, let's wrap this up, dude. And Rod, this has been fucking incredible. This has been better than I expected it to be, as always. Exceeded my expectations. Glad I got to chat with you this week. Thanks so much for doing this. Plug your show.
Check us out. The Black Guy Who Tips podcast. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic. Search The Black Guy Who Tips. And we appreciate everybody that listens to us. And, you know, if you're listening to me from our show, you follow me over here. Hey, check out the Mundane Festival podcast as well. And I'm a Patreon subscriber, you know, so support the homies.
Thank you, man. All right. Thanks, Rod, for doing this. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. Peace.